Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the TakeCast. My name is Davis Matic. You guys can find me on Twitter at Davis Matic. In this episode of the show, I'm joined by my good buddy, Peter Overzet, probably, honestly, my favorite person to talk to about Bitcoin and football and fitness and life and mental health. You guys know Pete. He's the absolute best. We all love listening to him make jokes, and we all love listening to him be serious. So, just another hour-plus conversation with my good buddy, Peter. Hope you guys all enjoy the show as much as I enjoy recording them. If you want to support the show, you can subscribe to more episodes on patreon.com/takecast. Been doing weekly recaps of The Mandalorian with my buddy John Sosa. Didn't want to throw those on the main feed, but I think that some of you guys who are really into Star Wars will enjoy those. But then also, you can just support the show by leaving a rating or review on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you listen to the show. And then also, subscribe and like Peter's YouTube channel. You can find a link to that in the show notes here. And now let's go ahead and get into the episode. All right, everyone, welcoming in Peter Overzet here to the show. We're doing something a little bit different. Actually, not the first time that the TakeCast has been live streamed, Pete. I did it once, I want to say about a year and a half ago, with our mutual buddy, Joe Holka. So this is the second
I should say, I actually don't, the way the StreamYard service is working, it looks like it's live streaming, but I have it private, so it's not actually going out right now.
Wow, what a bummer. We could have made history for the second time.
Sorry. I got to give the TakeCast the exclusive, and then we'll throw it up on my YouTube channel after.
Yeah, this is actually the only podcast I give my full attention. Like, I don't even have Twitter pulled up right now. So, like, I could be missing all sorts of fantasy football news or, like, Bitcoin going to $20,000 right now just because we're doing this show.
I thought it would take a certain level of guest on the TakeCast to get your full attention. I don't really believe that I'm actually going to get your full attention.
I mean, I can't promise that you're going to get my full attention for an hour, but you'll get my full attention for at least the next 15 minutes, at least until I need to start clicking around. We got UEFA Nations League soccer DFS lineups to set, which I think actually this is a good spot for us to start, is because our mutual Twitter buddy Alan Lem wrote this great article about the mental health aspects of DFS, and I was just kind of thinking about it, and I can't really think of something that is less good for your mental health holistically than daily fantasy sports. I mean, it's really bad.
It really is too. And I feel it and you probably experience this too, just when you're doing a lot of content and you're busy on Sundays, like there's this emotional weight that gets like, unlifted at the end of the day, where I'll just feel like empty inside, like almost even regardless of what happens. And it's just because this entire endeavor is ultimately like really meaningless. We're chasing like these dopamine rushes and these swings and these adrenaline rushes. And then you're left feeling very empty inside, especially if you lose.
Well, and I mean, the largest point is that you can't do anything to change the results. Like you're sitting there on Sunday and you're tilting and you're watching Red Zone and you're refreshing your score app. And I mean, sure, you should be generally aware, I guess, to be thinking about swaps, because swaps are important and you can generate a lot of extra value that way. But it's not like me watching the Cardinals game in the afternoon is going to change whether DeAndre Hopkins catches that Hail Mary touchdown or not. Like it doesn't do anything but stir up the dopamine and also the tilt.
And what's so hard about it too, is we all have like our main leagues, our main teams, our main contests that we care about the most. But when you elevate those, then you're sweating those harder. You're reacting to those harder. If that one goes bad, you forget all the good stuff that happens. But then on the flip side, the best way to do is to be in a lot of stuff. You get callous to the individual sweats. You have your portfolio. You take a more holistic approach, but that isn't also as fun. From a sweat perspective, I've definitely swung in that direction where I don't tilt or sweat too hard. But then again, I also don't get like the massive satisfaction of things going my way because I haven't put the emotional investment in it either.
Oh, I mean, yeah, 100%. Because like the thing I care about the most on Sunday really actually probably is what will impact my life the least, which is my cash team on DraftKings, right? Like, I mean, even a good year in DK cash would be like 9% ROI. Like if I hit 9% in cash games on DraftKings over 16 or 17 weeks, like that means I probably crushed. Whereas like my expectation is probably more like 3 to 5%. Whereas the potential ROI in the SPY, in the red zone, and you know, the single entry stuff on FanDuel is way higher. And then the potential ROI on our main event teams and our football guys teams are even higher than that. But that's the thing we care about the least. I mean, I guess I can't speak for you, but the thing I sweat the least on Sunday is the season long teams.
Yeah, no, it's the, and I, you know, the, it's actually bad for me for DFS. I actually don't live sweat anything. I am like very weird. I don't like sitting and staring at my DraftKings contest page, like the whole watch pot doesn't boil thing. And I take it to the extreme. I open up all of our season long teams like after the 4 p.m. slate has finished at right at, and I'm then going through being like, oh, this happened, because it is just too much. And also when you have all these different things across DFS, fantasy, dynasty, all this, it's like you get yourself in a pretzel. You're like, wait, I need this here, but this there. And that's not fun. So I'd rather just know the things I'm generally rooting for. Like, oh, we have Antonio Gibson on a couple of teams. If he does well, that's good for us. So I try to find myself in a place where I'm rooting for things as opposed to against things.
Yeah, I mean the most mentally unhealthy scenario, and I know everyone listening to this podcast has been here, where you need X result on Monday night, but you're also sweating Y result on Monday night. So you're looking for the perfect middle. Like for me last night, just for an example, is like I needed the Chicago Bears defense under, I think, like 6 FFPC points, but then I needed under Allen Robinson 14 PPR points. Like it's just one of those things where it's like I'm just watching this whole game and not rooting for anything. I'm just rooting for absolutely nothing to happen in this game.
You know what would actually be a cool tool for, you know, now we have all these good developers and stuff in the fantasy space. If someone could run a script that had access to your MFL and FFPC ESPN leagues, and it spit out a report of what you needed headed into Monday night, like across your thing, it basically gave you a portfolio snapshot of your sweat interests going in. I realize people do this generally on their own, but someone who doesn't, it'd be nice to know those things all laid out.
Oh, I mean, I would pay for that. You know, football guys, 4 for 4, any of you guys out there, if you're looking to extract $9.99 from me, I would pay for a live, basically just a live scoreboard of every league that I'm in. And I know that this functionality already kind of exists, but I wish that there was a better way to sweat best ball. Like it's kind of confusing to like go through all of your underdog stuff. You know, I know you are an investor at Underdog, obviously, but it is kind of just like a general hassle to sweat your best ball teams, which legally we're not even allowed to talk about.
We are legally not allowed to talk to it. This conversation is off the record, if any right. FBI operatives are listening. But yeah, I agree. It would be cool. Like basically what you're trying to know is, what I want to know is like which teams have their outlooks meaningfully changed like over the course of a week relative to the entire season. So maybe it's like you get an alert when a team jumps more than 2 places in the standings, or you get an alert when one of your teams is now in the top 3 of your league or something like that to let you know these are the teams that are trending nice. These are the teams that are trending down because of injuries or whatever, just so you can kind of mentally move on from the teams.
100%. I mean, that, like, it would be nice to know that, like, I would even just like an indicator of like, you drafted Cortland Sutton on this team, like, stop sweating it. You're not going to win. He tore his ACL. He scored 9 points. You know, you don't need to check in on this one. Like that would be nice. I mean, I'm sure that is like, there is going to be some kind of like AI assistant stuff in apps that's coming. I mean, I'm sure it's in development right now, but like the way apps are going to exist like 4 or 5 years from now, it's going to be like truly Black Mirror level of intuitive, where you're just going to be able to think it and you're going to be able to get your results.
Well, and it not only are these things we're asking for, but it's also, like you said, that's good for the apps. I mean, I just watched that Social Dilemma documentary on Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
How like the, you know, every, the stuff everyone knows, how these apps are reverse engineered to, you know, get our attention and keep us there. Think about how much we would log into our best ball apps if we were getting like basically stock level notifications on these individual teams.
That would be incredible, right? That like, okay, so that's incredible. Like you have five teams out of 150 that are, you know, outperforming their projection this week by 25%, like literally like a stock market alert. I mean, that would be incredible. It'd be amazing.
Yeah. And you could segment it out in different things. Like your team over the past 3 weeks is performing in the top 3 percentile of the entire contest, like you're rolling, which means you're getting hot or you're underperforming relative to your start. Like all those things would be, oh man, they could suck us in real good.
Yeah. I mean, wow. I hope Nick Rudman, buddy, if you're listening to this, I hope that you are passing this stuff on to the dev team. Cause this is all stuff that would, I mean, obviously it would engage me more, but that would get me checking the app more. I literally probably have not checked my underdog teams. I would guess I haven't opened it in 4 weeks, probably. Like it's been forever.
I check like once every 2 weeks just to see how many teams I have with a little Josh Hermsmeyer-esque medal next to them there. And I do also just want to point out how hilarious it is that we started this little segment on mental health of DFS and then thought up ideas to more ruin our mental health.
To just ruin our brains. I mean, it's like what we're saying. I mean, it is the most insidious activity, and it's so easy to just maintain that constant draw to the screen, you know, that constant draw to like, I got to check the score. I mean, there are 3 days a week where you're watching games basically. And I mean, like Monday Night Football, I just should not watch it. Has there been a really good classic Monday Night Football game? Like, why did I watch Bears Vikings? It was one of the worst games I've ever watched. And I saw every snap.
Yeah, I actually, I watched the Netflix original movie Holiday last night with Lauren, as opposed to watching Night Football, and it seemed like I made a pretty good decision, which is hard to do when you're watching Holiday.
You definitely made the correct decision. So Bitcoin, Pete, we are going to the moon. You can just always tell when the mood is changing, because now the Bitcoin tweets are like everyone's tweeting about it, right? Like it just everyone, you're getting questions about it from your buddies, from your family in real life. And it, you know, it's close to making me kind of want to be like, all right, well, this is top territory. This feels very December 2017. But then on the other hand, we have, you know, PayPal launching crypto support. We have the company Square and Microsoft announcing that they have purchased Bitcoin as part of their cash reserves. I mean, this could be the rocket ship.
Yeah, although I will say I read an article this morning, I think it was on Bloomberg and stuff, about why this feels a little different. And they were actually kind of saying we haven't reached the kind of point where, like, I do actually think the old Thanksgiving litmus test, like, I don't think my father-in-law is going to bring it up at Thanksgiving this year where he did do that 3 years ago,
in 2017.
Like, because yeah, it's going to be when it hits like new all-time high. Like we still haven't even passed the 20,000 all-time high. So I think in our circle, you know, we are noticing the chatter now again, which hadn't been there, you know, over the past couple years.
Yes,
but I think we still have another level. But actually what they said was encouraging about this is it's not driven just purely on speculation and all the FOMO and stuff like that. There's way more institutional investors this time around. We have more kind of like uncertainty in the global markets and stuff. So there's a lot more kind of, I would say, good reasons that are causing it to rise now than in the past. Although we will hit that point where then we get all the FOMO people hopping in again.
I mean, that's my favorite time. I know I actually have one buddy like in like of my college friends and stuff who I would consider, when this guy asks about buying it, like we're officially in Bitcoin mania. Like I think his first buy was probably at like $14,000. And that was when all three of his roommates had been buying Bitcoin for like the last 2 years. And he just could not have cared less about it. And literally this morning he was just like, so what's the deal with Bitcoin? Why am I seeing all this stuff? Which is, you know, again, that is very anecdotal, but that would definitely be something that Taleb would tell you is actually probably a signal. Like when random people on the street start asking about an investment opportunity, that probably means it's not as great of an investment opportunity.
The thing that's tilting me now, and I know I'm not the only one here, with bets being settled on the election, you know, depending on what sports books, or even if you were, you know, we know Empire Baker was have BTC bets with people. Like, you are losing so much money right now, not getting paid out on those bets. Like, I haven't been making sports bets because like my entire bankroll is tied up in a Biden bet that hasn't paid off yet. I just emptied the clip on it. And I'm like, okay, now can we pay this out here before Bitcoin goes to 25,000?
Yeah, I mean, that's actually really interesting because, you know, these Biden bets, I mean, I was sitting there looking at, you know, a couple different opportunities and I was like, do I want to have this money tied up in escrow or whatever for the next 2 months? Like, and my guess is conservatively in all of these like offshore situations, which is, you know, probably a reason why betting on offshores is, you know, why it's questionable decision making to begin with. I mean, my guess is there is $2 billion worth of Bitcoin just sitting in like fake offshore escrow right now, in Biden tickets probably.
Yeah, they're absolutely raking on it right now. And of course they take on the downside risk if Bitcoin plummets as well. But in this particular situation, they're loving it.
So what, like, does also, Lauren understand? Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say the one thing that we talk about holding up our money in escrow, we also have thousands of dollars tied up in season long, you know, best ball at DFS. And we weren't concerned about tying it up there.
Yeah, that's so funny. I bet, I mean, even with my teams doing well, I think every high stakes team I have right now is in the playoffs, right? I'm not striking out on any team that I spent significant money on. But I still, even with that, I bet if in August I had just taken every dollar that I put into seasonal fantasy football and I would have just bought Bitcoin instead, I can almost guarantee I'd have more money in my pocket than if I had played fantasy football.
For sure. And I'm even thinking about it like, oh, you know, I had a couple of my good GPP hits and I've just left the money on DraftKings, you know, because it's fun to look at. It's fun to do the screen shares and all that. And I'm like, I literally would have made way more money just and taking it all out other than what I'm going to play over the next, you know, few weeks, because the way I play, I'm a nit with my bankroll to where how much I'm going to play the season is pretty much already decided. I could just pull off what I wasn't using and invest it. But I was like, no, I'll have my DraftKings balance.
So the reason why I didn't pull money off after my, you know, I had two really nice weeks back to back is because I had just deposited in, like I think right at the end of August or the beginning of September, and I didn't want to refund my credit card points. Like I wanted to keep the points from depositing, which is like super nitty because you can just email DraftKings and be like, hey, don't refund my credit card and just send this to me on PayPal and they'll do it. But I just was like being lazy, and yeah, I mean, that if I would have just immediately gone to Coinbase or to Gemini or whatever and bought, you know, $10,000 worth of Bitcoin and just let it sat there, I mean, that would have been like, I mean, that's disgusting. That's like a year's worth of rent that I just cost myself, like through literal just like sloth level laziness.
Yeah. And I will say my thing with, you know, taking money off and putting a bigger sum into Bitcoin, that's all just hindsight bias stuff. Like one of the things that I've done, we've talked about it on the show from even like 2 years ago, just the dollar
weekly cost buys, baby.
The weekly buy, and you remove, because sure, I could have also taken all my money out and it plummeted $5,000. Like that's well within the range of outcomes. So for me with Bitcoin, I like removing the emotional element of it. I'm not having to take stands. I'm not, you know what? It's just, it happens every week and I trust in it long-term. What more do I need to worry about?
So I actually, I kind of do this thing where, I mean, I have my weekly buys too. But I also on like occasions, I'll like buy more Bitcoin, like on like my friend's wedding day, I'll like buy more Bitcoin and have it like tied up as like, oh, this is a signifier. I'll remember what Bitcoin cost on this day. And then I mean, every time you do well in DFS, like just buy yourself a little bit of Bitcoin as a treat. Like, oh, you know, you got the Seattle game stack, right? Like, go ahead and just buy yourself a little treat. Like, you know, instead of ordering, you know, Applebee's takeout or whatever.
Wow. This is where Dave is
a little bit of Bitcoin.
Showing his privilege, condescending to the people that like to get Applebee's takeout.
I do. To get Applebee's takeout, bro.
I like it too, because the normal one is just like, oh, just, you know, you, how much do you spend on a cup of coffee every day? I like Applebee's takeout as the new denomination for that.
Well, I mean, that's just, you know, I haven't been to a restaurant since March. So it's all been takeout, dude. I mean, that's just kind of how I think about, like, that is like the expenditure now. Cause like, you know, I'm not going to the movies. You know, we're not going out to dinner. It's like literally like the expenditure would be, you know, getting a nice place for takeout basically.
Yeah. The, all of my expenses are just way, 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 way down. Like, not spending money on anything other than takeout, probably.
My frivolous spending is actually up, because I'm just sitting at my fucking computer all day, you know? It's like, oh, great, I want to buy, you know, some new Adidas sweatpants. I want to buy a Theragun, you know? I've been buying, like, home gym stuff, because at this point, like, I don't think I'm going to want to go back to the gym for months. The gym that I had a membership to actually shut down, because they had like an outbreak there. Like, they were up and running and people were coming in and some of the workers got sick and they had to close it down.
Yeah.
Tough scenes.
Well, you have the, we've seen you on some of our calls for our FFPC league. You're down there crushing the recumbent bike.
Crushing it, bro.
I'm in a tricky spot, because I go to this boxing gym and they've resumed, you know, indoor classes, but I don't personally feel comfortable with it. And they have like an outdoor setup and they have some heavy bags out there. So I've been doing all outdoor classes now, but it's also, we're in New England here entering mid-November and it's starting to get really cold. And so it's going to be interesting to see when I throw in the towel and being like, I'm not going to go work out here in 15 degree weather in the snow outside. But again, it's been so good for my mental health and everything, creativity, just stamina, all of that, to be able to go to these classes three or four times a week and not have to worry about programming my own workouts, which I'm sure everyone, you know, feels this to some extent, but that's a chore and it's hard to do when you're trying to juggle a lot of other things.
Yeah. So what is your plan for the winter? I mean, are you just going to be doing push-ups and sit-ups in your basement, or like are you gonna get a treadmill, are you gonna get weights? Like, do you have a plan?
Yeah, we've started putting together, we have like an unfinished basement in our condo and we started putting together like a little workout area with dumbbell set. I want to get a few things, actually. I want to get a rowing machine. We also have like low ceilings in our basement, so there's not like a ton of options. Yeah. So like a rowing machine would be perfect, and I do think I might look into, if the like beams and stuff will support it, a heavy bag so I can do some of the boxing workouts down there. But yeah, I think if I'm not able to do outdoor workouts, I think I will just be fully inside. And I think I was talking with Lauren about it too. And I think one of the big things for me with workouts and why I love going where the class is already programmed for me is you're just less likely to do something when you have to think about it, like on the spot. And you're like, 100%. Not only do I have to work out, but I have to think of the workout.
So I have to think about the workouts. Yeah.
That's so hard. So I think what I'll end up doing is probably try to program for a week on Sundays and be like, Monday, I'm going to do this for 25 minutes. Just write it all out. So then when the time comes, it's like, I don't have to also expend that energy thinking about it. It's already there for me.
Yeah. So I guess what has worked for me is I have like the Nike training app, and it's actually free. Not all the workouts are free, but there are like lots of free workouts, and then it tells you the equipment you need to have, right? So it'll say like, oh, for this you don't need anything, or for this you need a kettlebell, or for this you need a medicine ball. And actually on Prime Day, I just bought a bunch of shit. I bought like resistance bands, kettlebells, a 15-pound medicine ball, like a bunch of different stuff. Like, I think I set up like a home gym that if I was motivated, I could do anything like work out whatever muscle group I wanted, get whatever cardio in for probably like $450, honestly, which like for, you know, in a lot of people's situation, that is unreasonable. But like, you know, I assume like if you have discretional income to play DFS, you could probably afford that as well.
Yeah. And I mean, even you can extend that even further. Like you can Google body weight workouts. And like, I've done these too, where you can get a 20 minute, a really good sweat, with just a body weight workout too. And obviously you ultimately get a little bored with that if you're doing it all the time. But like you said, even if you just get a few things of equipment, and not that people want to be like buying stuff on Craigslist right now and all that, but you can go get a used kettlebell. Like you can put together, and you only need a few things to be able to get a really good workout. I mean, if you had a resistance band, a kettlebell, like even just those two things, you could get an insane workout in.
And I mean, those two things you could order off Amazon right now for like a combined $1,150 for real.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, so this is an interesting thing that's related to this, you know, the price of a cup of coffee and everything. Have you ever been one of those people that's like really fanatical about like your retirement money? Or have you known anyone like that where it's like, you know, every dollar you spend today is like three retirement dollars? Which there are a lot of those people in the Bitcoin world, which is kind of what got me thinking about that. And it actually is insanely disheartening to think about your life like that. It robs you of a lot of current life joy to think about things that way.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've seen the charts and all the stuff, you know, the difference if you, you know, save an extra $5 now a month, like how that compounds, like everyone knows how that compounding interest and stuff works. But yeah, I do. Like, where does that end? You know, to what point are you putting so much away in savings? Not only are you missing out on other financial opportunities in the short term that might have a better ROI, but you're also, like you said, you might be sacrificing quality of life too. It's something I think about a lot too, of this idea of, you know, you hear it like glorified along, like, what if I just do 10 years of, you know, bare bones, eating top ramen, and then I can retire and early. And it's like, okay, but I'm also like, I'm 33 right now. Like, these are the years I want to be maximizing and living to the fullest extent. Like, I'd actually rather be a little pared down the road as opposed to right now. So I think it just depends on your philosophy and where you're trying to actually maximize your money. Did you end up reading Bill Perkins' Die with Zero book?
No, but I have, like, it's sitting on my shelf, and I would actually love to have him on the show. So Bill, if you are listening,
I think
yeah, he probably would. I just haven't reached out to him or anything. I actually think he would be a fascinating guy to talk to. I mean, the idea of like living your life in cycles though, of being like, you know, this 5 years, I'm just going to cross so much shit off my bucket list, and then I'm going to get back to the grind at like 35 or whatever. I mean, that's actually pretty interesting to me. Like that theory is, I mean, it's just so far away from our experience, right? Like everything, especially in Western society, is linear, right? We think of everything as a progression. You know, you go to college, you get a shitty job, then a slightly better job, then a slightly better job, then the best job. Then you go from your apartment to a condo to a nicer house. And it all leads up to living, you know, your best life when you're 65 or whatever, basically.
Yeah. And he has some like concrete examples in there too. And again, this depends on what your specific interests are. You know, he used the one of a guy who loved to ski and do all of these ski trips. As you get older, it physically is harder and less enjoyable to ski 10 days in a row. You know, when you're, you know, bones are getting achy and your joints are hurting, like all that stuff. So he's looking at maximize those things you can physically do now while you are younger. And he also makes the point of why being in shape, and Bales talks about this a lot too, of why that's one of the best long-term investments you can make, is because not only are you healthier, but you're able to actually maximize the things you want to enjoy down the road, because you can just actually do them longer than you would otherwise. And I think, you know, long-term or kind of world travel, physical activity, stuff like that, all fall into that bucket where you can actually maximize that stuff now.
Yeah, that is, I mean, that's like a very great point to make, is like your life from, you know, ages 40 to 50 is going to be a lot better if you, you know, took care of yourself, stayed in shape. Like if you get to be 45 and you haven't been working out, don't run, don't do any cardio. Like your body is just going to feel sick, dude. Like it's just going to be like, man, I just ate Burger King for 23 years and never worked out. Like your experience at that those ages is going to be not great. But, you know, on the other hand, modern medicine does advance in new ways, like literally every single day. Like there are outs for people who don't take care of themselves now to just have a whole different experience when they get older because of how amazing modern medicine is.
Wow. Davis touting not working out because you might get bailed out by a miracle drug.
But like you might though. Like that's a real thing that there might be some incredible procedure or like I mean like who knows? Like literally who could even imagine the growth curve of technology over the next 20 years? I mean, there are things that are happening now that 5 years ago sounded absurd and things that are happening now that 15 years ago sounded like science fiction. I mean, like literally with how, you know, there are so many people. So there are so many people incentivized to discover these things, you know, to make money, obviously. And we have an incredible amount of technology. There's an incredible amount of resources being dedicated to this stuff because obviously, you know, the richest people on earth, what do you actually want? You know, you want to live forever. So there are billions of dollars being poured into ways to make the human life expectancy longer and more enjoyable.
Yeah. And buying bunkers in New Zealand as well.
Is that a thing?
Oh yeah. That's like the Silicon Valley, like tech billionaire thing is they're all buying up properties and bunkers in New Zealand.
I mean, that's interesting to me. I would sign up for a New Zealand bunker. I mean, just the rich privilege of, you know, just hanging out in, basically, well, I guess the New Zealand's not tropical, but just like, you know, one of the most beautiful places on earth and never being bothered and living off the land, but like having Wi-Fi at the same time, it sounds pretty great.
Yeah, we should try it, but like in our own way where we just, you know, all we can afford is just like this 400 by 400 like studio apartment. But just in case, you know, we'll have our New Zealand place to escape to.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what it's all about. I mean, I kind of vacillate between like I only want to be plugged in. I want to have, you know, a 5G iPhone and Red Zone on my phone and the Chiefs game on the TV. And then like also at the same time, like, man, a cabin in Montana where you have to drive 20 miles to the grocery store to go get supplies, like also sounds great. And that, I mean, that's kind of the pull of modern living. Like it's exhausting and like emotionally crippling to be so plugged in. But like the thought of being away from the internet and from screens is like also crippling in itself. Like I can't even imagine.
Yeah. And I think over this COVID period too, I've found myself wanting to get out of the city more and more. Like right now we live like 15, 20 minutes out of Boston, but we're still in a very like densely populated area. And anytime we like go on drives, like through the country, or I see friends back home in Colorado, or I have friends that live in Montana, and I'm just like, man, the whole appeal of living in a city is being able to use the city, use the public transportation. Right. When that stuff is all off the table, the appeal evaporates like you know, very quickly. So it's something I think about a lot because I and also with all of us working remote too, like there really is no appeal to living in a densely populated city right now unless I'm missing it. I say that as a married man. I can imagine there's some singles out there that appreciate the dating scene in the big city more so than if they lived in you know, Podunk City, USA, but not at my stage in life.
Man, dating in the age of the coronavirus. I feel very blessed, obviously, to be in a long-term committed relationship for a lot of reasons, but I cannot imagine just the utter brutality of dating right now. It would just have to be so terrible.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. I have a buddy who he's in California and he was on, you know, doing all the dating app stuff, and he's just been in hibernation. Like he hasn't even been trying. He's just like, I'm not even gonna mess with it right now. And he lives in a small city to begin with, and then you throw in COVID and all of that, and I think it's incredibly demoralizing and discouraging.
Yeah, I mean, it would have to be, and it just like, I don't know, and then
you would feel like, you know, we got to go do something. It's not like this person can just come over to my house, right? Because that's strange. And then what do? I guess you go get coffee outdoors, but now it's like 37 degrees everywhere in the United States. So you're just, oh, dude, well, that's like giving me anxiety just thinking about it.
I've been starting to get jealous too of like I went to school in San Diego, and you know, I know there's a bunch of DFS players that live out there and stuff like that. And it's like, you know, the whole lockdown stuff is a lot more palatable when you can go be outside year round, you know, taking advantage of that for walks and access to the beach and all that. And so for the people that are still able to do that in SoCal and in Florida and stuff, man, I'm going to be extremely jealous for them when I'm having to, you know, bundle up to go on a 1 mile walk just to get outside.
Yeah. I mean, like seasonal depression is like already a thing, right? Like it, you know, it's dark at, I mean, it literally gets dark at like 4:45 now. Like it's unbelievable. It's terrible. But I mean, just the concept of being stuck inside for this entire winter. I mean, to even really think about the fact that like you're not going to go anywhere or see anyone that you love for like the next 3 months, it's like you almost can't even think about it. Like you really do just have to take it day by day, because it is so like, it's so extremely overwhelming.
Yeah. And we have this we're in this weird place right now where people, just how it happened in the summer, people have gotten bored of COVID. They've gotten bored and they've let their guard down. They become more complacent. And then on top of that, we have the really good news about vaccines right now that seem very promising and real and hopeful. But I think that also is going to contribute to a level of complacency as well, of like, I have this get out of jail free card coming in the spring. Like we're fine. Like, and so I do worry about these next few months in the winter. I think it's going to be, you know, if these early numbers are any indication over the past couple of weeks, it's going to be very, very bad.
Oh, it's going to, I mean, it is going to get brutal, dude. I think, I mean, we've already seen, you know, world record numbers of cases, but not, and it's not just in the United States anymore either, right? Like it's everywhere. And I mean, I guess if we wanted to be a little bit positive, you know, one thing we are seeing is like treatments are getting much more effective. Like, you know, for young people, it's getting figured out. And even the mortality rate on older folks who is getting it is a little bit better. But, you know, now the problem we're looking at is, and I don't know where it's like where you're at, but here in Missouri, hospitals are like shutting down voluntary procedures and stuff again. Like it's getting to the point where, you know, the ICUs and everything are starting to get overflowing, which is, you know, terrifying, obviously.
Right. And that's the rub with all of this stuff, right? Is it all comes down to what can the hospitals and like the healthcare infrastructure handle, you know? Because I think ultimately we would be fine if it's all spread out and they're able to, you know, take care of everyone who comes in with it. But that's, I think, the real concern is that overflowing that we saw early on. And it seems like we're headed there rapidly right now.
Yeah. All right. I want to go back to Bitcoin because I want to get your thoughts on this, because this is what I want to ask everyone. Are you getting the question of like, is it too late? Like have people asked you that yet? Like, oh, you know, it's $17,000, it's $18,000. Do you think it is too late to buy Bitcoin right now?
I absolutely do not think it's too late to buy Bitcoin. I think it's too late to take a heavy position trying to buy the dip, right? Like that's what you don't want to do. But I think the idea of you know, starting to invest in Bitcoin, of saying like, hey, I now, you know, you have to really interrogate your own reason. Am I just wanting to buy this because the price going through the moon and I'm trying to, you know, capture this in the short term? I mean, I would say do your research, actually sell yourself on the idea of Bitcoin long term, and then you'll want to invest in it intrinsically regardless of the price. And if it just in the same way, if Bitcoin plummets $10,000 over the next day, my weekly buy will still trigger on Monday, you know, like nothing truly changes. So I think that would be the thing I would say. And no, I don't think it's too late to buy, because you're buying into something that is a hedge against inflation. And it seems like that is also something that we are going to continue to see more and more over the coming months and years. And I do think that's kind of the weird thing about Bitcoin, right? Is where the true like bull, like moon case for Bitcoin is like the US dollar and a lot of fiat has just completely tanked.
Yeah, I mean, the 99th percentile for Bitcoin is that, like, honestly, it's like World War Bitcoin dystopia. You can't transact in US dollars or Canadian dollars or whatever. You have to send other people Bitcoins in order to, you know, secure land or property or whatever. Like that, you know, that's the Bitcoin dystopia that our buddies Aaron Lammer and Jay Kang talked about on the now defunct Coin Talk show. But like, even like, I mean, if you want to say like the 70th percentile outcome for Bitcoin is a deadly global pandemic that causes world governments to infinitely print more money, and, you know, only a small subset of the population is even buying Bitcoin.
Yeah. And to answer your first question, like if you have people asking you, you know, is it now too late to buy Bitcoin? I think you can rephrase it. Like, say you didn't have the means to contribute to a 401k or a savings account, but now you do. And they said, is it too late to start saving money for my retirement? No one would ever say it's too late. And that's kind of how I think about it with Bitcoin. I think you do really have to detach yourself from the price of Bitcoin right now and just think of it as a long-term value asset that you want to accrue.
I guess we should talk a little bit of fantasy football, right? Since it basically looks like this is going to be the year for zero running back. I don't know if we'll see another year this decade, right? From now until 2030. I don't know if we'll see another year that has been this good for zero running back and the tenets behind that draft strategy.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Zero RB and Robust RB for 4 minutes so Davis can do an all caps title. Robust RB is dead. Long live Bitcoin.
No, dude, the SEO is all in Bitcoin right now. Yeah, Bitcoin will definitely be in the title.
Bitcoin. Yeah, man, it has been a great year for, and you mentioned it, like Pat and I are having, you know, we've played in FFPC leagues now for 4 or 5 seasons together where we've done kind of content about it. And this is by far our best year, multiple teams in the top 200 of football guys. And one of our main event teams is in the top 250, I believe. Just the simple thing of hammering those wide receivers in those premium rounds, you know, 3 through 5 ended up just being the dominant strategy for this year. And that's with taking big hits at losing tight ends early, losing wide receivers. And I do also think the other thing that happened, and I forget who I was listening to. Oh, I think Pat was hopped on the podcast with Sean Siegel and Colm. And the other thing that zero RB and modified zero RB allowed you to do this year was prioritize a ceiling quarterback in round 6 through 8. And we ended up with a ton of Kyler, a ton of Dak. That didn't work out, but a ton of Watson.
Well, it did. It did, but it just ran bad.
It did. It ran bad. But that was another thing from a construction standpoint where it's going to be hard to, I think, take down one of these tournaments if you don't have a Kyler or Russ on your team, or Mahomes, obviously, but he wasn't in that same price range.
Yeah, I mean, I would be shocked to see like a Kirk Cousins led team. Though I want to be on the record here as saying I think that Jameis Winston could really shake things up. I really do, because you have Jameis throwing to Manny Sanders, Traquan Smith, Jared Cook, Michael Thomas, Alvin Kamara. And again, my guess would be the Saints are not going to run the Drew Brees offense with Jameis, right? Like they got to let him rip it and grip it, right? I mean,
yeah.
He's not going to be throwing 7-yard screens.
And the thing too about Jameis is it sounds like he said he's going to miss at least 2 to 3 weeks. I mean, I know you wrote about it. Everyone's writing about this schedule. They get 2 dome games versus Atlanta in the next 3 weeks and then a game against Denver. So, I mean, even if you have your doubts about Jameis, I mean, the schedule could not be better. I guess where my doubts come in would be like, are these weapons actually a good stylistic fit, and do they have the guys that can really make plays? I mean, when I think of Michael Thomas, I think of all these precision routes with Drew Brees. I don't think of Michael Thomas being a great pairing with Jameis, but I hope I'm wrong.
Well, this is Michael Thomas's chance to get rid of the nickname Slant Boy, right? He's not going to be Slant Boy. Like, are we going to see Michael Thomas with like a 12.5 ADOT? I mean, maybe. Like, that would be amazing. And also, I mean, Godwin played in the slot with Jameis and had a lower A dot than Mike Evans, and was like, Mike Evans was the better stylistic fit, but you know, Godwin still did pretty well in that role. Like I think Jameis, like, he's not in that tier, but I think that it would be possible for him to get in that Josh Allen, Kyler Murray, Dak Prescott, Patrick Mahomes tier of fantasy quarterbacks the rest of the way. I don't think that it's like the most likely outcome, but he is, I think, the first quarterback we've seen on the waiver wire yet this year who could join there, and which, and you know, could swing the balance of a lot of these season long tournaments.
Yeah, no, I do agree with that. That I think he's one of the more intriguing streamers we've seen pop up. Like we added Tua in a bunch of leagues and in our league in the FF or in the football guys. And the thing about Tua is their defense is playing so well, and they're playing a very kind of like ball control offense. Whereas we know once Jameis is in the fast track on the dome and these shootout game, like, they're just gonna let him rip it, dude, and he's gonna be very good for fantasy, I think. So I think it'll be good, and yeah. Also, to talk about, you know, we're talking about zero RB and all this stuff. I mean, Scott Fish literally just posted the screenshot of the updated league, and we have Anthony Amico, friend of the show here, who is up still in. I think he dropped to, what is he in now? I can't even read, but he's still up there with a pure zero RB team. We got yards per Gretsch there. We got Pat is in 32nd. I'm in 47th with a technically a zero RB team now that it lost Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, but it lost Saquon.
It you're there in the top 150 as well. So I mean, it's been a good year for that construction in a large field tournament.
I mean, Scott. Oh, sorry. Scott basically made the perfect rules for zero RB because like the onesie positions, like if you get those correct, you can absolutely crush. And I have Patrick Mahomes and Kyler Murray. Those guys have scored the first and second most points in the Scott Fish Bowl. Like I looked at this the other day. I have one game through 11 weeks or through 10 weeks of a running back scoring more than 15 points. And it was Chase Edmonds when he was a backup and he just happened to score a long touchdown. But J.K. Dobbins hasn't had a 20 point game. Edmonds only had the one. I've started LaMichael Pirine. I've started Boston Scott. Like I just, these total nothings, but you just don't need them because wide receivers score more points.
Yep. Yeah, no, it is true. And the other thing that has been interesting is there were a lot of teams, myself included. Like I think I ended up taking three tight ends in the first 10 rounds because I didn't get an early one. The kind of loading up on tight ends has not worked this year because outside of Kelsey, like no one is truly dominating. And there were a lot of people that used a lot of kind of valuable draft capital on tight ends in this format. And again, I don't necessarily think that was bad process. We've just seen such an underwhelming year from tight end.
This is the tight end apocalypse here, right? Because Ertz sucks, then gets hurt. Kittle has two good games, but gets hurt. Waller has been, he's gotten a lot of volume, but certainly Waller has not been a league winning player, right? I don't think anyone would argue he's been like a league winning player. Evan Ingram has been mostly bad. Even the guys like Higbee, Gesicki, Fant, these guys have been hurt or average. Hawkinson has been, I mean, this has got to be the worst tight end year ever. I mean, how many tight ends are even going to score 100 PPR points? Like five, maybe? It's so bad.
Yeah, I mean, Gronk was the highest tight end on the main slate this past week with what, like 14 points? I mean, it's just unbelievably gross out there. And yeah, I mean, for DFS especially, it's been there's just no one to pay up for. It doesn't. I mean, I saw a lot of guys were winning tournaments with Logan Thomas this week. The dude just gets six targets every week and is priced in the low threes. It's like that's why I don't mind taking a zero from Jacob Hollister this week or whatever, because yep. Like it, how much different is Jacob Hollister from Goddard? You know, for 2,000 more, like there's no difference at this point.
Yeah, no, there isn't. And I mean, I guess that's probably a good lesson to take into next year of like, don't, and we do it every year, but like, don't talk yourself into TJ Hockenson in the seventh round. Don't talk. I mean, Irv Smith Jr. was going in like the eighth round of these things. And I mean, he literally, I bet Irv Smith Jr. I'm going to look right now. How many catches do you think Irv Smith Jr. has this year?
I would guess he has like 8 catches.
I was going to guess 12. He has 13. And I mean, and it's like, these are the, like, Irv Smith Jr. was probably going ahead of like Tony Pollard, you know, like even like premium zero RB guys. Like it's just insane. I mean, I don't know. The big disappointment though has been Mark Andrews, who we thought Mark Andrews was going to be the tight end one. Like we really did. And the poor Ravens, bro. It's been brutal to watch.
How much do you think Mark Andrew, I mean, I know they're intertwined, but how much do you think his struggles have been related to just his own kind of performance and skill set versus just the team really struggling?
Well, it's definitely related to the team struggling, because last year they were playing so fast and this year they are playing super, super slow. But I mean, he does drop balls all the time. I mean, like, it is so infuriating to watch. Like, he just lets them doink off his hands left and right. But I mean, Lamar has just been terrible. Like Lamar has not been good throwing the ball. He has been bad. He has been inaccurate. And Andrew's value is so correlated to touchdowns that if the offense is playing slower, scoring fewer points, I mean, he never had a chance, really.
And the other kind of development too is, I mean, Lamar loves Willie Snead. Like he locks into Willie Snead so much. And it's the biggest tease, because Snead looks like a slightly mini me version of Mark Andrews. I get excited every time. I'm like, nope, that's Willie Snead, not Mark Andrews.
I mean, also another good conversation, as you are a Showdown thought leader. Showdown might be dead. I think that slate, not dead, but like, The only thing that matters now is finding unique constructions, because in that Ravens Patriots showdown slate, the Willie Snead captain, Rex Burkhead, Lamar Jackson team was with Jacoby Myers was duped like 50 ways. Like that wasn't even a unique construction, where Willie Snead was like 1.6% owned in the captain and only 20% owned period. And that team at the top of the Million Maker for Showdown was duped. I mean, that is disgusting.
It is, but I'll push back and say, did you see the team that won? I don't play the big one. I always play like the $3 20 max ones and stuff, but
the
team solo shipped that last night with a construction that two made defenses. A lot of sense. Did you see that?
Well, I mean, people just don't do the two defenses, right? Like they just are. They're... What's that?
It wasn't two defenses.
Oh, that was the one that won the Millie Maker, was two defenses.
Okay, yeah. So this one that solo shipped first by a couple of points, it was Jefferson captain with Cook and Thielen, and then he played CPAT, Santos, and Bears D. So it was just like the studs for the Vikings with...
And zero QB.
Yeah, and the fact that that wasn't duped is kind of nuts to me. Good for $100,000. So I do think there are paths to still getting unique, but that is the name of the game. I'll even plug, like, I know there's certain tools for that, but this guy made his own free site. It's sports-projections.com, and he has a little tool where you can just upload your CSV from a contest and immediately search for dupes. And I do think that is the number one thing to tell if you are playing well, is just checking your dupes in those big contests.
What do you do to try and get unduped? What is the Peter Overzet Showdown thought leader secret sauce?
Well, I haven't been doing well at it lately, because I'll still have, you know, teams. I don't have anything egregious normally over like 25 or 30, but I still have like too many that are in that bang end. I'm just looking at cumulative ownership, and I know that the multiplying ownership is probably better. I haven't found a way to do that easily. But yeah, I'm just pruning and being very aggressive. One thing I think I need to, I end up landing on optimal captains a lot and then cycling through the really low owned one-offs, but I think I might try to mix that up a little bit more and try to get more of the contrarian captains, just because I think that's a more logical and easier way to get unique.
Well, something I've been trying to do is not spreading at captain so much, like not playing like 9 different options, but so like on Monday night for that Bears Vikings game, I only used Jefferson, Patterson and Allen Robinson. So none of the quarterbacks, didn't use Dalvin Cook. I mean, really, if you're wanting to think about the easiest way of eliminating duplicates and finding unique constructions, it's don't play the chalk running back captain. So Derrick Henry, Dalvin Cook, Ezekiel Elliott, those guys, like, just don't play any of them in the captain, and then don't play quarterback captains. And you've already, you, like, right there, you've knocked off like 50% of the pool from duplicating you. And, you know, you're gonna lose a lot of the time, but also you're gonna lose a lot of the time anyways, because showdown's really hard. And that's just, I mean, that's just the name of the game.
Yeah, it is. It is very hard. And I've enjoyed it this season because it's one of those things, because if you play, say you like me, I just play the three island game showdown contest every week. Like, you can get in lots of reps, you can get in lots of data points, you can get familiarity with the same contest over and over. Like, I kind of have a good feel for how aggressive I need to be in pruning dupes. So I just think there's value in getting really familiar with a specific contest type and specific contest size. Cause that's the other thing I really try to do too, is tailor, you know, my cumulative ownership to the size of the contest. I like playing a lot of these winner take all showdown contests too at the smaller stakes, just because people are generally jamming like optimal stuff in there, and you can really lap people just getting a little bit off of the optimal. So yeah, I think being very cognizant of contest size and showdown is huge, because the difference between a 400 person showdown contest and the 150,000, yes, it's a different game completely.
Has your lineup or is your contest selection basically stayed the same in the main slate as well? Like, my favorite contests are the smaller spy. So there's a spy with 5,000 people, and then a spy with, I think that it's 1,000 or 1,100 people. Like, that's my favorite one on DraftKings. And then the stiff arm on FanDuel is $75, and it's like 900 to 1,000 people, depending on the week. And those are like, the ones that I spend the most time thinking about. It's my teams in those every week.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I mean, when I had my big hit earlier this season, I scaled it up to where I was like playing any of the spies they offered, any of the red zone. But I'm with you. I like the smaller red zone, the smaller spy ones. It seemed like most weeks the smaller one has been 2,222. And then this past week, like you mentioned, they made it even smaller, which I like.
But they did like three of them though.
Did they? Yeah.
Yeah.
So no, but to your point, I've mostly been playing like the exact same volume every single week. And maybe that's nitty, maybe that's wrong, but I just, it's the one thing I think I'm pretty good at is having good bankroll management. So I'm just going to keep that locked in.
Yeah. I mean, that is, that's the key. It's very easy to hit and then just, you know, play every contest and just, you know, whatever. And it's very easy to give it back in DFS. There's an infinite number of things to play. There's an infinite, you know, there's a lot of buttons to click, and that's been the battle. Especially because I haven't withdrawn. I am just so much a nit at heart though. Like, it's so hard for me to even try and get like 1% of my account down, you know, cause I can't do it cause I'm a nit.
Yeah. And I don't know, I've enjoyed, you know, playing pretty contrarian this year too. So like, I know that means I might have 7-8 slates in a row where I make very little. So that's the other part of it, of like, I want to keep this cushion so I can continue playing. And I've heard the stories, the people who come on your podcast to be like, you know, I've never deposited, you know, I've never had to do that. Like, I want to turn over the new leaf here and never have to deposit again on DraftKings. I want the deposit king to be dead. And this is part of it, I think, is having really good bankroll management.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. What a story from doubt. Just like, oh yeah, dude, I deposited $50 and now I own the site. Now I made enough money on DraftKings to buy DraftKings.
That was a great episode. I wasn't familiar with him until the episode and started following him on Twitter. Seems like a very sharp dude.
Okay. Last thing. Have you watched any of Polk versus Negreanu?
Just like, I watched a decent amount of the first live studio one.
The live session? Yeah, the live was the best.
Yeah, where everyone was mad that they were all chummy.
Yeah.
It's so funny, too, that people want, it's like, people talk so much shit on the internet, and it's fun, we all do it, and yet everyone in person is generally going to be cordial. Like, all of these assholes on Twitter do not have the stones to actually, they're like, why aren't they like fighting like they do on Twitter? It's like, it's so much easier to chirp on Twitter. Like, they're not going to be, you know, on TV and wanting to strangle each other. Like, I don't know what people were hoping for there.
I mean, that's literally they wanted Polk to be like, Daniel, you suck. I can't believe yeah. you did that. Like, what a noob play. You're an idiot. Like, that's literally what they wanted. And they didn't get it. I mean, I thought it was refreshing. I don't want to turn on. I don't want to watch 2 hours of poker and have dudes just like be negative and terrible and rude to each other. Like, I want the happiness. I want the kindness. I didn't want them, you know, yelling at each other.
And the other thing is for me, I actually think there's something even funner to them being cordial, because I like picking up the like very subtle passive aggressiveness, the very subtle condescending things. And you could see it now too on their Twitter. We're like, yeah, there was a really nice session. But I actually ran pretty poorly in my all ins here. You know, he was running like a god. Like, I don't know. I enjoy picking up on kind of the subtle frustrations when they're putting on a good face.
Yeah. The internet's reaction to this match has been hilarious, because it's so, I mean, we all know that we're results-based, right? This is like the we all know that we have a very hard time thinking in probabilities. That's just like a very classic, fake. It's honestly, at this point, it's like fake sharp to talk about being probabilistic and instead of being results-based. But I mean, it is wild. We're like, Negreanu takes 200K off of Polk, and they go, oh, the odds were wrong. Negreanu's still good. They, you know, and then they play online and Polk gets it all back, right? He has like a 400K session, and they go, Negreanu should be 20-1. He can't win. He lost it all. You know, no one, like, Negreanu doesn't know how to play. And then Negreanu wins 250K the next session, and they go, I don't know. Maybe the odds were wrong. And it, like, it's just wild to see it vacillate like that.
We also, I mean, it happens in DFS too, like, you know, Empire dusted Osimo in the 10 challenge, and then it won't get reported, but Osimo won the $1,500 single entry game changer this week by 20 points, just absolutely ran away with it on one of these low scoring weeks. But again, you know, Osimo sucks, the worst, you know, player now, because he lost these 10 Thunderdome slates. But it's like, that's not how this stuff works.
It is. I mean, I just think that no one will ever forget the Julian Edelman play. No one, like, I will, for as long as I live, I'll never forget Osimo playing Julian Edelman in the Thunderdome. I don't even know what he did in golf or what he did in MMA, because, like, I don't know. Well, I guess in golf I know, but I wouldn't know what was a bad play in MMA. But I just, like, the Edelman play, I'll never forget.
It is. I felt the same way. Like, I don't know anything about the sports enough to look at a lineup and know. But the other one, yeah. I mean, maybe we should bring Fantasyland back from the dead to do like a 30-for-30s profile on the Julian Edelman play.
Where were you when Osimo flipped over Julian Edelman in the Thunderdome in the challenge? All right, Pete, tout chip chasing and all the good stuff.
Yeah, we continue to roll on Wednesday nights on the Ship Chasing channel. We're going to have our buddy Crack Rock on, the guy who loves to crank it purple on Wednesday
wow. night here.
That's right. Yeah, we have a really nice main event team with him. And yeah, we'll have to get you back on soon to talk about our ship taking team, which is doing well here. And then, yeah, I just have, if you're watching this on my channel, I have been doing a review show on Mondays for my DFS single entry teams, and then I do a Friday build show just focusing on tournament strategy and stuff like that. So I think people would enjoy those as well.
Yeah, we got to we have to run hot here in week number 11 to make sure that we lock in the playoffs in ship taking. But everyone follow Pete on Twitter. Next week the show will of course be back, and we'll talk to all you guys soon.